Behind the Badge, Illinois. I'm your host, David Hochberg. Let's get the plug out of the way. Since we're financing this and promoting it, if you're looking to purchase a new home, refinance your existing home, love to help you and your family accomplish those goals. All first responders, EMT, military, you all get the same discount. So bring it on. 855-56-DAVID. Go to 56david.com. So we're going to jump right into it because we got Kirk and Steve got to jump off for a call with the state, and then we're going to come back for part two. But a lot of things happened this past week, right? The attempted assassination of the president, heightened security alerts, heightened security awareness. You know, we're not going to go into what happened in Pennsylvania because that's a little too hot right now. We'll let all that sort itself out with all the background investigations going on. But I thought it'd be important for our listeners and viewers to understand what happens on the other side, right? You guys are local community. You got the Secret Service, you got the FBI, and they rely heavily on local police forces to help out with added security. So, welcome Kirk down O'Fallon. Welcome Steve. Steve, you haven't been on in a while. The town one more time that you are the police chief at.
Yeah, Fairview Heights. I thought maybe you fired me or something.
I didn't fire you at all. No, that would be Lou who takes care of that. Since he's not here, we'll blame everything on Lou. And of course, we've got AJ from the ILACP checking in with the association's viewpoint of these type of topics. So let's start with you, Steve, since you haven't been here. You've had prior to hitting the record button, I asked you and Kirk if you'd had any experience with any type of details, and you've had. So can you talk about the experience you had with elected officials of high importance coming through your area and what that was all about?
Absolutely. Before I was the chief of Fairview Heights, I was a captain with St. Clair County Sheriff's Department, and we cover an airport, Mid-America, is what it's called. And we've handled three different presidential visits going all the way back to President Bill Clinton and several vice presidents, Speaker of the House, that type of stuff. They kind of like sometimes to fly into a smaller airport, get away from jamming up traffic in the middle of St. Louis. So I can tell you, of course, I can't go into the super secret spy stuff that's done, but I could tell you kind of the process of what happens, at least how we did it then. About anywhere from 3 to 4 weeks ahead of time, if it's a planned visit, the Secret Service reaches out to our department. We assign a commander to be in charge of that visit. And then that commander will coordinate many, many resources within our department and other local departments where they may be traveling through or additional resources, along with Illinois State Police, sometimes Secretary of State Police. And I can tell you this, the three presidential visits, it was for about 2.5 weeks, 20-hour days
Wow.
leading up to that, including weekends. And it was a lot of work. We were constantly running the route that they would take, looking for any type of anything that could, you know, lead to peril for anybody involved. We were training officers of what to look for. We were looking all the way around. We always say this, you know, in law enforcement, 360 is not enough. You always hear people say, hey, watch your six, you know, always look for 360. Well, the reality is law enforcement doesn't live in a 360 world. They live in a 540 world. You have to add another 180 to that because not only are you looking all the way around, you're looking up and down. People hide up high, they hide down below, all those types of things. And I always thought one of the big things that stuck out is when the presidential motorcade or any dignitary motorcade come through, your normal reaction is you want to face it. You want to see them. So training the officers that your job is not to look at them, but to look outward and look what are other people looking at, who's where, what's going on, all those types of things is absolutely huge. And I know some of them violated it because it's just natural to turn around and want to look at them, but you got to look the other way. The other thing that we would use very heavily was technology. Now, I'm going back in a way before drones, but drones is a big thing nowadays. But not only that, there is software technology that's out there. Kirk and I have a buddy that is a chief in a southern area that hosts concerts regularly on a beach with 75,000 people. And there's software that's out there that I'd actually seen at the Illinois Chiefs conference that will scan the crowd. And if it sees on a camera a firearm, the camera automatically zooms in on that person and alerts everybody who's connected to the system. Here's a picture of the person that just adjusted a firearm in their waist. And especially if it's a situation where, firearms are prohibited because it's a dignitary protection, that type of stuff. So that technology is out there. And a lot of these big cities and places for dignitary visits are using that type of stuff to your advantage to keep people safe in a significant way. But it is, I remember this, I'll just throw this out there. We would run the route back and forth. We'd have officers stationed at anywhere that you could to keep things safe. Turnarounds on highways would be blocked with dump trucks, tow trucks, fire trucks, all those types of things. It was very, very intense. But then what we would also do along the way is enlist people in the area that were good with giving us information about maybe local threats, those types of things. And we would be proactive going towards them and maybe even having discussions with them, right? Trying to prevent types of things, see where these people who are troubled, where they're at ahead of time. So you can see this is an all-encompassing type of thing that 20 hours, days working on all of this together for many days ahead of time to try to keep it safe. I can add a lot more, but I don't want to monopolize. Kirk, what would you add to that?
I think probably the biggest surprise for me was we had a vice presidential visit. While we didn't handle the motorcade, we handled the helped with the site security at one of our conference centers where he was speaking for a fundraiser. And everybody thinks that the Secret Service has this massive cadre of employees that are there and they do everything. Well, the fact is they rely heavily on state, county, and local law enforcement to help them with this. So, like Steve said, it wasn't just, I mean, with planned visits, it's really nice because you get 2 weeks, 3 weeks out, they're coming, they're looking, we're formulating plans together, but they really do rely on local authorities. So we had probably 15 of our officers that were assigned to that for that entire day. And our command staff, like Steve said, working 40 hours a week for the 2 weeks ahead of time. And this is just for the site visit. We didn't have to do all the stuff, where we had miles and miles of different things that we had to protect. So it was a massive undertaking. Very interesting to see. Now, the Secret Service is always the one that they take the lead. They tell you what's going on. Everything goes through them. But they also understand that they could not accomplish that mission without the help of the local police departments. And I get, nobody wants, even the Secret Service, the local police departments, nobody wants something bad to happen on their watch. And it is. It's a little nerve-wracking that you're sitting there with your head on a swivel and you're wanting to make sure, because even though it may not be my ultimate responsibility to ensure the safety of everybody, you know what I mean? Because the Secret Service is there, they're in charge, but everybody plays a part in that, and we all take it very personally from a law enforcement, from a police perspective. And I'm sure you have felt the same way, Steve. You're just like, if something happens, this is as much on me as everybody else. We have to work together to make sure this happens.
Best part of that day is when I would assume the best part of the day is when they're out of your town and you hand it off to somebody else.
Yes, just a sigh of relief. Like, okay, you could take a deep breath. It's over. But it was a neat experience, obviously, because obviously nothing bad happens in any of our experiences as well.
Well, I experienced some. Go ahead, Steve.
I'm sorry. I remember when Kirk reminded me of something I was thinking of earlier that so the motorcade and people involved in that is very, very specific. I was shocked that when my officers pulled up, the Secret Service made all the officers get out of their own police cars, and our
Oh.
police cars were searched for explosives, bomb dog detection, all of that. And I don't want to say they don't trust the police, but they don't know them like their own Secret Service, right? So it was rather intense. It was very specific of at what intervals the route would be checked ahead of time. And I remember, I won't dime anybody out, but it was a department. I don't know if they missed the briefing or whatever else, kind of on their own. One police car decided to run the route ahead of the presidential motorcade. And we're all on the same communications. I can hear Secret Service. They can hear me. And let's just say that almost ended up very, very bad because it was a vehicle that was not cleared. So the coordination is absolutely massive in a big way. And everything is to the T. And I think because of it, like what Chief Kirk said, is it's exhausting. But your main goal is it ain't gonna happen here, right? That type of thing.
I think the public doesn't realize I had a office in the West Loop of Chicago, 2 blocks away from Oprah Winfrey Studios, Harpo Studios, and she was interviewing President Obama at the time, right? And I had heard something, streets will be closed, traffic, but I'm like, whatever. So I walk out. I had to go to the bank, which was 2 blocks past Harpo, right? So I walk over there. All the streets are blocked. I'm like, oh my God, it's supposed to be the president. They had Chicago police cars stacked up back to back to back for an entire city block. Okay, as you guys know, but our public doesn't know this. He had a couple of ambulances there. He had the Beast. He had the presidential detail. Then I came back the other way, walked around, and you saw the paramilitary guys up on stage at the end there, right? And I was walking back down a busy street here, Randolph, that was shut off, right? CPD shut everything off. So just me walking around, and all of a sudden there's a Suburban with the back open, and there's four guys in the Suburban. And as I get closer and closer and closer, they're in full military combat gear, bulletproof, M50, the machine guns. And I'm just like, holy Christ. I said, okay, whoop. I don't want to get any closer than I had to get. I know I identified them across the street, walked on the other side of the street, but just the scale of equipment and protection, fire trucks and ambulances and an entire block of Chicago Police Department cars and all the other stuff. I mean, it's quite impressive and a huge resource drain on your local community's police force at the time as well.
I
I had a quick
think,
question. Oh, sorry.
yeah, no, go ahead.
Both Chief Johnson and Chief Brueggemann, you guys talked about how you had the long hours for your officers and stuff like that. How did you keep them fresh? Because, of course, you don't want them to get too tired out throughout this whole process. So, how did you make sure that they were fresh and ready with all those long hours?
I think the big thing is just coordination. Chief Kirk and I were both for many, many years in the Major K Squad of Greater St. Louis. And that's a group of 500 homicide detectives that will be called out on homicides. Anywhere from 40 to 50 detectives will come out. They have the highest clearance rate in the nation. Well, early on, they would work, ungodly hours in 5 days. And they called it the zombie squad. Well, what you found out after a while is, when you were tired and haven't slept for 3 or 4 days, that is worse than driving drunk, right? So now they've transformed it to understand that you got to get sleep for your people, right? So it's just coordination and leadership and stuff like that. I think it was interesting what when Dave was talking about Chicago and all the resources, not only are the tactical people there from Secret Service along with their people that wear the suits, but also all of the local tactical, what used to be called SWAT, now SRT and stuff like that, are all activated. It's pretty much all hands on deck. And some people would say, well, that's kind of a drain. Is that really worth it? Well, Kirk nailed it. Do you want it to happen in your town? So you do everything you can to make sure that it doesn't.
Yeah, because everybody's going to remember Butler, Pennsylvania, right? I mean, that's not good for the police chief and the county everybody down there. What type of resources does the association provide for the chiefs when a high level person, a dignitary, whatever the proper term is, president, vice president, speaker of the house, visiting presidents from other countries, you know, prime ministers, whatever their, you know, whatever their designation is. What type of support and training do you guys provide your chiefs and your departments to handle the crush of demand for extra security?
Well, preparation is key. I mean, that is really the key when it comes to these events is preparation. So we do a lot of training. We've got our, you know, training conference, and we've got different types of training at there at these locations where we train them about big scale events and security. And I think like Chief Johnson was saying, the different kind of technology that's out there and available that they can use, some that people probably don't know about. I really enjoyed hearing about the cameras. We also offer them a networking component because you can network with chiefs and other law enforcement leadership across the state. Hey, I've never had this in my town. Has anybody else? What did you do? And you can ask for advice and you can network that way. And it's all behind our membership wall, of course. So it's all private. We're not releasing the data out to anybody else. So they can have that networking component to really talk and come up with a really cohesive plan. Asking others for advice. There's always statewide calls for big events like this with like Illinois State Police and things of that nature. So we put the call out to our members to let them know what's going on. I think we even have a call like that today. So yeah. We sent an email out last night to all our membership. Hey, this is an important call. You need to be on this. This is going to be a big talk that you need to be prepared for. So like I was saying, preparation is really key. And then connecting people across the state to make sure that they, if they need those resources, if they need that advice, they can get together and they can figure it out.
All right, and we've got about 3 minutes before you guys got to go to that call that AJ just mentioned. Just real quick, in 90-second answer from both Kirk and Steve, how do you pay for this? I mean, you're in not the largest metropolises of the world, right? I know Chicago's got a strain when, you know, budgetary challenges. How does a town like O'Fallon and Fairview Heights handle those extra expenses? Do they get government stipends from the government, or does it come out of your budget?
Comes out of the budget, and technically, I guess you're not required. I mean, there's no federal law that says that we are required to give our police services. But when a dignitary comes into your town, you know, usually your local politicians, your local mayors, your county board members, you know, it's they want that to happen. They like that. So obviously, they're willing to open up the coffers to make sure that thing happens, because, you know, we could essentially say, no, I'm sorry, we don't have the manpower. But, you know, when those things happen, you know, police, law enforcement, they work to help each other out, and you just make it happen. And, you know, and we didn't bat an eye. We knew this was happening, and we were going to give all the resources we needed to. And we had a mayor and a city council that was more than supportive of helping it. And sometimes you're going to have those things where maybe somebody from the other party is coming in you know, doesn't really look like you might have a Democrat coming in and you're a highly Republican county or vice versa. But I've never had any issues, and I don't think you've had any issues, Steve, with anybody right. saying no. We look at it as police are there to help each other out, and we need to make these things work.
I see it very similar to, you know, Fairview Heights had a tornado come through town, destroyed a bunch of stuff. And of course, we had to activate the whole department, natural events, that type of stuff. It's just part of police work. It's what you have to do. You have protection and service.
I want to dive a little deeper into the technology that you guys use on your side. And I'll just give you an example. I was kind of blown away that and I'm sure it'll come out, but drones being used. I know we started the segment talking about Butler and then the former president's recent assassination, a failed assassination attempt, thank God. But I volunteered at our local 4th of July parade. I did the Citizens Police Academy, and they put a call out for help. And I was a crossing guard and right outside our library, and they had two officers on top of the library, and I could hear the drone. I couldn't see the drone, but I could hear the drone. And I know that Northbrook's employing it. And I was just shocked that technology isn't being used, in when the president was speaking last Saturday, I would figure a drone up in the air, you get to see all the authorized and unauthorized people on rooftops. So what type of technology is being employed and is available and that you guys have employed in the past to keep your dignitaries and high level visitors safe? And the not only them, but as we found out with that unfortunate death last Saturday, the volunteer, I think he was a fire chief, got killed at that rally. So what are you doing to keep not only the high level dignitaries safe, but also the public who's just there checking things out?
I think there'll be a lot more that comes out about obviously the incident, what happened. I know one of the things, and this is public knowledge, so I'm not talking about super secret spy stuff here, but obviously Secret Service and federal agencies will run anti-drone technology because you don't want someone rogue to be able to pick up a drone at Walmart and load it up with something and send it in. So then if you deploy drones and you're running anti-drone, that complicates things significantly. So I would suspect my guess is many agencies are going, special federal agencies are going through a challenge there with technology to, can you run it on different signals and so on and so forth. So that's part of it. I relate some of it to just regular events that we have in town, and Chief Kirk does also. We have large gatherings, we have Wing Fest, we have, homecoming stuff. And nowadays, anytime you have large gatherings, you're very, very concerned about, a rogue actor or something going on. Some of our neighboring town, we have one neighboring town that I'm pretty convinced has a parade every single weekend. And, they put up cameras, not only static cameras, but mobile cameras. We have a device, which is a mobile camera system we can deploy. It's a big trailer, solar, looks 360, thermal, night vision, all that type of stuff. And not only do we use it, we don't hide it. We want it out in the public. We want people to know it's got flashing lights. We want people to know it's there. It's about that visibility. Now, I find it funny because every once in a while we'll deploy it and someone will complain. Well, is it reading my license plate? Does it need, no, I'm sneaking home for lunch from work. And, I mean, that type of stuff. And of course, no one cares about that. But I will tell you, last week we had it deployed in an area. We have a child sex offender that we're looking for. We have a warrant for him and we're having troubles finding him. So we have it deployed trying to determine what time of night and so on does he drive by. So you can use it for many, many things. I think about these large gatherings. I'll throw this out there, really for discussion. There's some communities that are like, look, we have a chili cook-off going on, but that brings thousands of people here and sometimes people who act stupid. And so they'll actually deploy officers on the perimeter visibly that have rifles deployed on them. And some people would say that's overkill, but it was amazing how many people would come up to those officers, the chief told me, and said, I feel really safe that you guys are here. Because when you're going up against large crowds and someone who shows up with another rifle and all you have is your sidearm, that is a significant force difference. But you gotta, all of this is what can your community tolerate, right? In so many ways. They're always afraid of Big Brother and sometimes justifiably so. So we have to be smart about how we deploy things. I am absolutely huge on, I want my community to know everything that we're doing, in a big way.
Are you finding, before I throw it to Kirk, are you finding a greater, with all of the craziness, for lack of a better term, that's been happening with all the school shootings and the parade shootings and what happened at Highland Park 2 years ago, just the nuttiness out there that your community is less hesitant with the show of force? Than with the show of force than having to worry about it? Are you getting any? I know that you just said that your residents are going up, or at the parade, they're going up to the police officers and thanking them and that they feel safe. Those folks that aren't going up to them, do they feel the same way? Or are they more like, I don't need to see these long guns out here?
That's a good question. I think Chief Kirk and I are in a very unique area in that if you hop on the highway, we're 17 minutes away from Ferguson. So you would think that we would be hated because that's what the news media played worldwide when that was. But I'll just tell you, in the middle of those events, people were dropping off food. People were thanking us. You forget going out to eat. Everybody would try to pay for your dinner. And of course, we appreciate it, but we don't feel that's right. We don't really want it. All of those things. But I think it's the way that our department provides professional law enforcement in a big way. When we have big festivals and events and we deploy drones and we have many uniformed officers, it is literally thank you for your service over and over and over again. Now, I am convinced that the death of me, after 35 years in law enforcement is going to be social media because the keyboard warriors will get on and that's invasion of privacy and blah, 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 blah. And of course, we try to explain to them, nobody cares what you're doing other than we're trying to keep everybody safe. And you get a few of them, but I think overwhelmingly from my side, it is support because they see the things that are going on.
What about you, Kirk, in your community and the extra technology that you use that Steve might have left out?
Yeah, no, I think you hit the nail on the head with the social media and people like invasion of privacy. What people don't understand is we're busy enough. I don't have time to just look and see what normal people are doing. I mean, we just don't have the time or the energy to invade people's privacy. Everything that we're doing is to try to keep people safe. And if you'd have told me 25 years ago that it would be the norm to have a police officer on a rooftop with a long gun during a parade, I would have said, "What in the world?" But the tolerance, like you said, the tolerance has gone. They're tolerating it a lot more. But you have to have that. You have to have that balance, like you said. What might be okay for this community over here, and with having somebody with long guns out on the perimeter, may not be good for this community. And it's just the way policing is all over the country. Different communities will tolerate different things based upon their past history. I can tell you right now, probably 5 years ago, up in Lew Jogman, up in Highland Park, they would have thought it was crazy. I did not want to see a long gun out on this from anybody. But now, with what's happened in their community, I would say that they would more than welcome to have those officers with rifles out, keeping everybody safe. So it's really a balancing act, and it's something that, as a chief, as a leader, that you really have to look at, and you have to be in tune with your community. You can't just say what works for Steve over in Fairview Heights is automatically going to work for me in O'Fallon or is going to work for Lou up in Highland Park. You get ideas from everybody, but it's like, is that going to work for us? So it's always a challenge. It's a balancing act between trying to find out what's going to work. The drones are a really interesting thing too. I know Steve has a lot of drones that he is employing. We use our fire department to deploy our drones, and they've been very successful to have these things out there. And I don't know if we've talked about this in the past, but up until just a few years ago, we weren't even allowed to use drones at public events, and now we can. So there's rules in place, and every time and it's really great to have that support also from ILACP. In the next couple of weeks, we've got a big conference, the Midwest Security Conference, that a lot of us chiefs and a lot of our command staff will be going to see some of these vendors and show us some of this technology that'll keep us safe. And the one thing that's kind of crazy about this is it's super expensive. So the great thing about it is having those relationships. Like, I can call Chief Johnson up and say, "Hey, we have this event. Can we borrow this? We're borrowing a couple UTVs from some different agencies for our festival, so that way we can have it." Because realistically, not one police department can't have all of the toys and things that they need. We really rely on each other to kind of, be able to have a nice little arsenal of security measures.
So, AJ, I'll throw it to you. Kirk and Steve just finished up a call with a number of different chiefs. That's why we had a break, part one and part two. What goes into those calls from the organization standpoint? Who organizes it? Who sets the agenda? And what basic macro, without going into detail with the micro details, what's covered in this specific call that got everybody to, clear their schedules and get on at 10 o'clock for a half hour with the ILACP?
Details. I mean, the call wasn't with the ILACP. It was, orchestrated by the ISP
Oh,
and
sorry.
the local departments that were involved in what they're going over. So it was more than just a statewide call. We had some people from other states as well on the call. But it was just details was the most, it was the biggest part of it, was the details of here's what happened, here's the facts. Without anybody else misconstruing it. Here's what we know. Here's what we think could happen. Here's how we're going to keep you all informed going forward. So it's mostly the details, unless I'm mistaken, and Chief Johnson and Chief Kirk want to jump in.
I think it really is preparation. If something goes bad, kind of like what happened recently, everybody's blaming law enforcement, they're blaming government, they're blaming everything. So when you are able to get people together and plan ahead of time, it is absolutely critical. One of the things that we think about with our large gatherings, and even with I'll tell you this, we had several years ago, the Speaker of the House in town, and we activated our tactical unit, and he was very, very adamant that he did not want them visible. So frequently, we will have backup forces and technology ready to be deployed, all the equipment ready, sitting in the vehicles, and most people don't even know that they're there because they're not out right out front. We don't want to make people afraid, but that prep—I mean, isn't it the Boy Scout manual, right? In a big way, be prepared. Is what it so much is about. Because if it goes bad, then all of a sudden, well, why didn't you plan? In a big way. So, getting all the chiefs and departments together to discuss a potential upcoming event was very important. So.
And I'll just share again my experience being crossing guard for the day at the Northbrook parade, 4th of July parade. Got there at 2 for a 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock parade. I sat in the room with the chief was there, the deputy chief was there. They had all the local parks folks that were closing the street down and parking their trucks. As you would see here in Chicago, when president comes in, they get salt trucks and load them up with salt. So not only is a salt truck a deterrent, a fully loaded salt truck with rock salt is what they bring out to block all the bridges, to give you some perspective what goes on up here. But I was amazed at the efficiency. Three or four undercover officers walking back and forth, right? With their sidearms and police everywhere. I was looking up on roofs because of what happened in Highland Park. And I'll just tell you something. 6 weeks after the 4th of July up in Highland Park, they have a huge art festival, huge art fair. And Highland Park, for folks that don't know, is your typical small town grid, 6 or 8 blocks in a checkerboard pattern. And wife and I go every year. I'm looking up on the roofs. I was freaked out, right? And that was 4 to 6 weeks after. And I'm always looking up on roofs whenever I'm in large groups settings like that. Have you seen that change too with the public, that they're just hyper aware of everything around them? I mean, I'm aware anyway because of just I'm just focused on safety and keep my family safe. Are you seeing that the public in your areas are more attuned to what's going on, like in Butler, if you will? Everybody's saying somebody's on the roof, somebody's on the roof, somebody's on the roof. Is that what you're seeing at these larger events as well, that the public is helping you guys out?
All of life is about situational awareness, right? In a big way, especially as you add years on in your life, you're much more situationally aware simply getting out of your car so you don't break a hip, right? And life in public is the same thing. We preach it, don't go through life being a Rambo, but don't forget to look around when you leave the mall and you're walking to your car, you're going to a restaurant, you're taking out the trash. I relate it. My dad, the greatest man that I know, sorry, Kirk, to disappoint you, but he was survived Vietnam, Marine Corps, Combat Marine, St. Louis City many years, police department, involved in several violent incidents, survived them. And became the director of the police academy, doctor degree, dean at the college, all of that, and retires. And him and my mom are leaving a restaurant, and four guys come up behind them and rob them at gunpoint. And they do three more robberies up north of us and knock a female unconscious. And my dad said, even if he had his gun on him at that point, he was so tuned out because when they left the restaurant, they were going behind some villas with some other older couples to look at flowers. And you weren't thinking that 360, 540, right? But I do see more of a conscience from our citizens on large gatherings of looking around. One of the things that I think was very good, what little I know from Pennsylvania, is that people were telling police there's someone on the roof there. And I think some time ago, people would not have that awareness. They're much more aware. Not everybody, but I think more people are now more than before.
Got it, Kurt.
Yeah, I would tend to agree that more than before, but it still is. It's still not perfect, obviously, but that's kind of what it is. Sometimes we want our public to just enjoy life, and it's tough to be a police officer and to always be looking and to have your head on a swivel, and there's stress with that. And I accept that responsibility that that's what our role is. Our role is to be the guardians, to be the protectors, to be out there. We do need help from the public, and there are a lot of people in the public that will help. But at the same point, we don't always have to have our head on a swivel. Our public doesn't. We want them to be safe. We want to be kind of behind the scenes sometimes, keeping them safe. So it helps to have them, but at the same point, it's never going to be 100%. We'll just keep working at it.
I remember a double murder case that we worked probably 25, 30 years ago now. And it was they're all bad, but this was very heinous. It was a mom with a young child in their house, and a bad guy came in, didn't know them, and stabbed them to death with the scissors. And the detectives that worked this case literally solved it by knocking on every door in the neighborhood. What did you see anything suspicious? Did you anybody weird driving down the street? Anybody, any of that? And what we always do is we're looking for everybody who lives there, right? So there was this one house. They talked to the mom and dad. Okay, yeah, we got kids. Are they here? No, they're not here. Would you mind if we talk to them? Yeah, but they're not here right now. Okay, we'll come back. They come back and there's a few of the kids there, but not all of them. And they go, well, we'd like to come back and talk to the final kid that's not here now. It'd be our third time coming back. And like, well, we talked to him. They didn't, he didn't see anything. And, well, if you wouldn't mind, could we come back? Yeah, absolutely. So they come back the third time and they're talking to this young kid. I forget the age. He may have been 12 or 13, something, maybe even a little bit younger than that. And as they're talking to him, you see anything suspicious? No, anything, blah, 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 blah. And they go, what about any strange cars driving through? And all of a sudden you could see this young kid's eyes light up a little bit. And he goes, hold on a second. And he goes back upstairs to his bedroom and comes down and hands a scrap piece of paper to the detectives that had the written license plate number of a suspicious vehicle that he saw several days before, and he was taught by his DARE officer in school to report suspicious things. That turned out to be the murder suspect and was what solved the entire case. So imagine if we could teach more citizens, more people, more eyes and ears of being out there is absolutely huge in a big way.
Hey, do you want to close out this segment? Because I know that Chief Johnson's got to hop on another call here about your experiences out in the public and being aware and your spatial intuitiveness, if you will.
Yeah, I'll say that since having the two kids, we do go out a lot on the weekends, festivals and things around town. And Springfield is, while it's a small town, it's also a larger town. But definitely since Highland Park and the 4th of July stuff, I'm more hyper aware, but I'm also way more appreciative as well to having that extra care, those extra officers on scene, that I'm also less likely to look up at the roofs because I know that our officers have our backs. And it's not just because I work, you know, at the Illinois Chiefs and things like that. It's just I feel very comfortable. My husband is a very overprotective dad. So he's always hyper aware and looking around 5:40, as Chief Johnson was saying. And if he sees anything, even the slightest bit suspicious, he'll always find the nearest officer and be like, hey, I don't think that guy's supposed to be flying his drone, or this guy, I'm not so sure about him. So I know everybody's, they are hyper aware, but I think everybody's also very appreciative of everything that the officers do to help keep us aware. I could say that, you know, as a woman, we've always been taught to be hyper aware of our surroundings. Heck, I went to the grocery store just the other day and I just didn't like the look of a guy that was coming out of the store after me. So I did the whole, you know, keys between the fingers thing. So we're always taught to be aware just as women. Unfortunately, that's just how it is. I wish it wasn't that way, but so we're all hyper vigilant. We're very appreciative of all the extra steps, but I still do feel safe out there. I still feel safe out at the festivals and things like that.
All right. Well, that's going to be a wrap because you got to jump, Chief Johnson. You guys want to end? Thank you for sharing your thoughts on that, AJ. That's very. It's good to know, right? It's good to know that what's going on out there, and that people are. You just got to be careful. You never know, right? Like your dad leaves having a meal and he gets jumped. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, I walked to my car here at NBC Towers. I got my head on a swivel, right? And I'm downtown Chicago. I mean, you would think it's at one time it was safe. Not it's not safe anymore. So you got to be careful no matter where you go. So like you said, AJ, you always got to be looking around, especially at the festivals with the kids, right? Running around at a park, you never know the type of nut job is out there. You guys want to add something in 30 seconds or less so Steve could be on time for his call?
I would say that. You know, this whole podcast was kind of based on what happened in Pennsylvania. And what is very, very important, in fact, Kirk and I have already talked about it, is that after action report. So, you know, with both of our departments, we're always looking for continuous improvement and growth. So once that comes out, you always look for best practices and lessons learned. And so it's so absolutely important that it's impartial and it comes out with the real facts. So we'll be looking forward to that.
Kirk?
See something, say something. That's what we tell our people. We tell our communities. We can't be there all the time. We can't see everything. If you see something, then say something. And that's how we can kind of help solve some of this stuff.
All right. And you want to plug your event real quick, AJ, that's coming up that Kirk mentioned previous in the next 30 seconds?
Yes, we have the Midwest Security and Police Conference and Expo. It's coming up August 22nd and 23rd. This is the biggest show in the Midwest for technology and different types of equipment and for security personnel as well as law enforcement. We have sold out all of our booths, so we have even more than we did last year. We've got all kinds of free training for law enforcement officers from not just Illinois, but our surrounding states, whoever wants to come in and check it out. Again, August 22nd and 23rd. You want to check it out more, www.mspce.com.
MSPCE.com.
Yeah.
All right. This has been another great episode of Behind the Badge, Illinois. Thank you, Chief Brugman. Thank you, Chief Johnson. Thank you, AJ. Again, in closing, you're looking to purchase a new home, refinance your existing home. I'm your guy, 855-56-DAVID. Go to 56David.com. Download the podcast. If you like this, comment on it, like it, share it, and download previous podcasts We'll be back next week. Have a great weekend.